This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at LinkedIn.com/decide. That's LinkedIn.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome in Matt Clement, former big league pitcher, sponsored by Dell Technologies. He joins us right now. Did you catch Scherzer's act, Matt, and the umpires going through Scherzer's hair and all over his belt loop and everything else? And oh, where are we with baseball?
I caught it, and I guess the part of me that is humored by Scherzer's intensity, because I humored and respectful of his intensity, knew that wasn't going to turn out very good at the end of it, especially when it happened multiple times. And Joe Girardi is one of my favorite teammates I ever had, so it was really interesting perspective, I guess, of the whole thing. And then you flip on Twitter and Sergio Romo is pulling his pants down in the Oakland game and he gets checked. So it's a complete, I don't know what they're going to do, but something probably needs to be done, or this is going to get worse every night, because there's some dudes that are flying high on adrenaline at the end of these games and aren't going to want to play that game.
Well, and I understand Scherzer being upset last night because he'd already been checked twice, and then Girardi calls for another check in the middle of an inning. And that, to me, is the interesting part of this, Matt. Everybody's mad at Major League Baseball, and I understand it. They're trying to implement this thing mid-year without a lot of foresight, it doesn't seem like, into how they're implementing it. But Joe Girardi and every other manager in baseball has had decades to call on umps to check pitchers for foreign substances, and rarely, if ever, have you seen it happen. And now, all of a sudden, after he's been checked twice in the first three innings, he's going to wait for the fourth after a strikeout and call for another check. The hubbub over Scherzer in particular last night, I put on Joe Girardi.
Yeah, I can't disagree. And it's interesting because I've thought this through and I've watched it. And Joe is like as straight of a shooter as I've been around. But again, when you're a manager, and I wasn't with him when he was a manager, even though I knew he was going to be one to tell when he was my teammate. As a manager, maybe he's trying to throw him off his game and get his team to win a game, or throw Scherzer off his game. But at the same time, Joe's smart enough to know that that's probably the wrong dude to do it to, that he's going to come back firing even better and even more. You know, you could just see the buildup. You could read it on Twitter like, okay, that's probably the wrong person to pick off right now. I listened to Joe. I was waiting to hear Joe's interview, and Girardi's comment was, haven't faced Scherzer in a while, but when we faced him in the past, I've never seen him go to his hair in the past. And I thought to myself, logically, you know, the reason behind that is, you know, in the past, whatever was really allowed, or maybe the case may be, maybe Scherzer's never used anything in the past, but he said he likes to usually use spit, and he felt like he had to use rosin last night, or whatever the case may be. He's just trying to get some sweat. And that's the logical, answer to it. And, you know, I think Glasnow kind of let a lot out of the bag with some of his comments about, you know, everything. And he's probably just trying to get some moisture on his hands in that situation, because he put too much rosin on his hand, because that dries it out at the same time. And I did see a pitch where he almost hit somebody in the head last night, which some of these pitchers are going to use this to advantage, right? I mean, they're going to throw one behind your head and be like, hey, I can't get a grip on the ball. And then that batter is going to be a little bit more timid there. I think it's going to work against the fact a little bit more than people expect it to, because he threw that pitch inside high and tight, and you're like, oh, my God, he doesn't know where it's going. We're really in trouble.
Brought to you by Matt Mertz Plumbing, Pittsburgh's leader in trenchless sewer repair, former big league pitcher Matt Clement. Okay, gave you the chance last week. Now we circle back and do it again. This is high time to incriminate yourself, because the statute of limitations is done, so you can't really incriminate yourself. Are you going to come clean and let me know that you used pine tar inside your belt, or what? Are you going to just let it out of the bag yet that you did this during your playing career?
I didn't.
Oh, man, see?
Stick by your story, Matt. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I did some experimenting when days look like they're going to be really humid and there's going to be some problems. I did some experimenting like bullpens and ahead of time with like the old shade. You'd see stuff going on and it was very vague. And like I said, the hitters didn't care because of the control. And, but nothing that I ever felt, you know, I didn't feel comfortable changing what I was doing, to tell you the truth, because, you know, I looked at it the opposite way as, okay, if I do this, I'll have a little bit more command. I looked at it the opposite way as, if I do this, who knows where the ball is going to be going if I try something different. And I already was wild enough and leading the league in walks and hit. I almost had the triple crown run here of walks, hit bats, and then wild pitches.
Nice.
So
nice.
Maybe I should have. You know, maybe I should have tried something like that, and I would have been a lot better off. But no, it just wasn't. I don't know. I felt like I got a pretty good grip from just, you know, licking my fingers and using the rosin bag. And I did it a lot to feel like I had a good grip. And I just switched the balls or whatever the case may be. And no, I wish I could give you some good juicy story, but I don't have one.
Well, make one up next time, Matt. I mean, come on, give the people what they want.
If we're going the hat trick, asking me one more week to incriminate myself, I'll come up with something.
Okay,
good stuff. Yes.
Matt Clement with us on the Fan Morning Show. Follow us on Twitter at 93.7 The Fan, driven by Jim Shorkey, Kia Wexford, North Huntington, and Uniontown. Let me ask you about your cubbies, because Javi Baez, I don't know if you caught his act the other night. Just lost track how many outs there were. David Ross pulled him from the game and said it wasn't so much to make an example out of Javi as it was to allow him to have a moment to maybe get his head right, because we've got to be focused when we're out there. How does that play in your mind when you take – because Javi Baez strikes me, and we talked about it yesterday, as a guy who, as fun as he is to watch, can be just as flighty, but he's also one of the faces of the franchise there in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, it's a dangerous situation as a manager, because you're trying to, you know, I guess he's saying he's not setting an example, but what else are you doing there? I mean, you're setting an example when you do that. It's like the guy not running out of play and the guy bobbles the ball and you're still out at first base and you pull him out of the game. You're setting an example, whatever you want to call it, giving him a space, giving him a timeout, letting him refocus. And you know, as flighty as Javi Baez is, and he's the face of the franchise. And, you know, in today's day and age, you know, if that something like that happened to me, I wouldn't think twice of it. I'd be more embarrassed and say, you know what, I deserve that. But in today's day and age, you're running the risk of somebody going on a full media tear of, like, forget this, get me out of here. I don't want to be here anymore. This is bullcrap. And I guess that's the situation when you do something like that. Now, with David Ross being a, you know, as a respected Cubby and a guy that's a, you know, a former teammate and everything else, you probably run a little less risk, but who knows? I mean, you could, not only could you lose the risk with Javi Baez, you could lose the risk with the rest of the clubhouse being like, hey, we can't do that. We're trying to win a pennant here, and you're doing this here on a mistake that in today's day and age, I think, is more considered an innocent mistake than it would have been back in the 70s or 80s.
Matt Clement joining us here, brought to you by Matt Mertz Plumbing, Pittsburgh's leader in trenchless sewer repair. I have a question. How did David Ross become this great respected Cubby, by the way? He played for them, like, not a long time. He was he signed that two-year contract. He's a guy that obviously, you know, during Game 7 of that World Series against Cleveland, hit that home run. I get that. He's the oldest player, I think, to do so in World Series history. But if you just walk in and think like David Ross, people have the impression he played for the Cubs for like 10 years. It's not the case.
No, I think that when you're one of the people that you're in a situation, all the people on that team, when you end a 100 and whatever year drought of Cubs not winning, you're going to be a little bit more respected as a Cubby, no matter if you were there for 10 days or you were there your whole career. I remember when we went and the whole Bartman incident happened that year where we basically should have been in the World Series and we didn't finish it off when we were up 3-1. It was like you were walking around town, and it was a big difference from the year before when we were probably one of the worst teams I played on the year before. Like, you win that. We complete that World Series. We're still, that team still thought of pretty highly, those players that played on that team. Now, when that team won the World Series, it kind of, that was as close as they'd gotten in so long. I remember we clinched the division that year. It was like the first time since 1945 we clinched the division on Wrigley Field. And it, you know, so I think that takes it, the Boston first team that came back with Millar and Bill Miller and Bellhorn and all those guys. And I'm, you know, when some of those guys, Orlando Cabrera came over in a trade that year, he's a hero there forever. So I think that's part of it. And I think there's a general consensus of, like, catchers, and even if they're journeyman catchers, that like the Joe Girardi, that turn in, they weren't starters the whole time, but they just have a big presence in the clubhouse. And I was only around David Ross a couple times when I was visiting the Cubs when they were in town here. And you could just feel his presence within the clubhouse and the way the reporters respected him, the clubhouse attendants respected him, the players respected him, the manager respected him, like the whole staff. He was like part of the staff as he was a player. So I think that's how that happens. And it's a, you know, I guess for David Ross's perspective, a perfect storm of things happening to get him in that respect.
Do you remember that Orlando Cabrera is famous for going on a radio rant and a couple reporters about how he was Colombian, and when he'd come back through customs, he would get the hardest time? I'm serious about this. Did you know this?
I'm not aware.
Yes, in that he thought he was singled out, and they thought he was a drug runner, and he was so upset about this. I read like a couple stories about this, and he is just furious about it. Uh-huh.
TSA at O'Hare getting a little...
I promise you.
Huh.
And now he lives in like remote New Hampshire. I swear.
Of all places, for Orlando
Cabrera. I'm unaware of that story. Maybe because I was playing, I didn't get that story.
Yes.
Serious question for you, Matt. We saw last night another decision by Derek Shelton that had at least a few of us scratching our heads about leaving Tyler Anderson when he did to face Grandal and then the big three-run homer. They ended up coming back to win it, but he's about 130 games into his managerial career now. When do you think managers start to get a feel for how they're going to handle, not just when to pull starting pitchers, but that really is one of their biggest decisions, just game day management? How long does it take to get into that, I guess, rhythm?
Well, I feel like he's into it right now. And when a couple, you know, when a couple decisions get questioned in a week, it's easy to pull up a manager who has less experiences and critique him, especially when it goes wrong, as wrong as it went last night. So I don't feel like he's not in his rhythm with it. And I think in today's day and age, again, you're looking at, this was starting to happen at the end of my career, where sometimes I don't want to say this because he is, but like sometimes the manager isn't making the decision. It's the statistics are making the decision. And I don't know what the numbers were, or, you know, with Grandal, you know, being a switch hitter with him batting one way or the other, or any of that stuff. But I think that probably drives the decision more than gut did, which is what happened more when I was playing. It was more a gut decision. At the end of my career, it started to be a statistics decision. And I know he got criticized for pulling Brubaker on Sunday too. And, there's a lot that goes behind it. I thought Brubaker had a great response to it. You know, he was very professional in his response to it, no matter what he was feeling with it. And, you know, I think there was a little bit more feel that went with that one, because like third time through the order, he's been struggling a little bit more than he did the first two times he buzzes through the order. And he's in a situation now where he has, you know, where Shelton has to figure out, how am I going to get him through that third time? And maybe this time gaining the confidence, even though he had 69 pitches through six, I think it was the right decision, or 6 2/3 or whatever it was. And I remember when that came up, I remember an incident with me. I was always the five guy because I threw so many, I walked so many guys. I was already close to 100 pitches after five innings, and that's just the way it was. And when I got to Chicago my first year, Don Baylor was my manager. And after like the second or third time, and I kind of hit a lump, and I was on a bad team that year. And he came out to the mound. I remember him telling me, he goes, I'm not pulling you out of these games. You're going to figure out how to get through these games and how to get through that part of the game. And that's on Shelton, when he's going to – Shelton and Charrington and all the people in the front office, when they're going to give it to Brubaker to get that chance to pull through there. And maybe they've given him some chances. It hasn't worked out so far this year. And this was one where he wanted to gain confidence, you know,
it's a little bit tougher on a bad team in these situations to do that. But I remember it clear as day when Don Baylor came out, and it kind of surprised me, and it helped me, though, because he's like, I'm like, oh, he has confidence in me. He's not the guy saying, why'd you walk so many people? He's like, let's get through this, and let's make you into a better pitcher. And I think that time's coming for him, because really, all things being considered, I think Brubaker's been the best starter this year, and he looks like he looks the part too. I mean, he really has. So, you know, it's tough stuff. It's tough stuff as a manager, and it's easy to get criticized. And again, when you're the second worst record in the NL, it's a lot different decision making than Dave Roberts is making in LA.
Matt Clement, Matt, we thank you so very much. We'll chat again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right, Matt. For sure. All right, we got. What? Something happening here. Turn around. No. I just read. Inbound Route 28, a disabled vehicle blocking a lane of traffic near Shaler Waterworks, causing delays between the Highland Park Bridge and Route 8 Aetna Bypass down to one lane, I think is what they meant to write. So there's already traffic with the Highland Park Bridge or whatever being closed. It's all the way back from Shaler Waterworks to the Highland Park Bridge, which is beyond that. This is the ultimate turnaround, go home, try again tomorrow.
Sounds like a remote work day.
It is not happening for you if you're stuck on 28. It is. This will be before it is 7:17 right now. By 7:38, this will be back to Indiana, PA.
Is the Highland Park Bridge closed already?
There was this big story yesterday. All I know is that
I know it's imminent.
They did, yeah, I think
it is. And it's
going to
be basically all summer.
They did a remote, not a remote, the reporters were standing in Sharpsburg yesterday.
Yeah,
and there'd
yeah.
be no other reason to be standing in Sharpsburg at 5:50 in the morning.
So here's the thing. Even if you work in, like, the East End
yeah.
or, you know, and you think you can wiggle your way over the bridge and through the city, and you can't even do that now.
No, totally
you're just
effed.
Done.
Totally effed. The Highland Park Bridge. Yeah. So,
welcome to your work day.
28 is jacked to begin with. And now there's a car that's all screwed up by the Shaler Waterworks. Just go home. And you can't turn around. There's a median.
No.
Or as some people call it, Yen, there's a medium. There's a medium right in the middle. There is.
The point is mute, Colin.
Yes, it is. A mute point.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.